Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
You know, it's been so different for me because I grew up doing the offshore stuff with him. So like when I took a liking to the more of the inshore stuff, it was a big change. Kind of, you know, you're more isolated, you know, you're not talking on the radio. You really don't want to talk to anybody. At least I don't. I try not to talk to as many people as I can, but you know, it seems like it's more isolated and you're kind of on your own, you know. I've been lucky enough to have some buddies that have helped me out in sending business, but it seems like you kind of have to find your own path. And it was good to grow up around that too, because you learn a lot of people skills with the offshore stuff. You know, you're dealing with six people instead of one or two.
Right.
So that was cool to learn, but it's definitely changed. I've noticed there's a lot more center consoles running around now, you know. It seems like the fleet of boats is definitely changing, just the style of fishing, and everything's so moving so fast now.
This is the Tom Rowland Podcast. Fascinating stories to amaze, encourage, and inspire you in fishing, fitness, and the outdoors. And we're brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee. I started this podcast as a way to connect with my friends, people that I admire and respect, and you. It has been a learning journey that's made me a better person, a better fisherman, a better father, and a better athlete. I'm so happy that you're on this journey with me, and I'd love to hear from you with show suggestions, guest suggestions, or questions. The best way to get a hold of me is through text. You can text 305-930-7346 for the fastest response, but if you prefer to email, you can send that to podcast@saltwaterexperience.com. That's a dedicated email address just for the show. If you like this show, you can show your support by posting about it on social media and tagging me. Text the link to a couple of friends that may also enjoy it, and subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you feel like I've earned it. The website is TomRowlandPodcast.com, and that is where everything lives. All past shows, you can go and listen to any show. You can look up all the different shows that we've done, both the How-To Tuesdays, the Full Links, and the Physical Fridays. They all live on TomRowlandPodcast.com. And the social media is Tom_Rowland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D, on Instagram. Or you can go to our big account, Saltwater_Experience. I hope to hear from you soon. So now, let's get on to today's show.
I'm Polly Ross, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
All right, Paul, what's up, man?
Oh, not much. How about you?
I'm real happy to have you on here. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while.
Yeah,
For sure. How's fishing?
It's good. I've been up at school a lot, so.
Have you?
Trying to knock that out so I can fish this next coming week. So.
Yeah, so tell me about that. What's the process of going to school and being a fishing guide?
Burn a lot of gas on both ends. a lot of gas, a lot of miles. Drive up there. Right now it's on a Tuesday morning, go to class Tuesday, go to class Wednesday, go to class Thursday, and then come home that night and fish Friday through Monday. So it's good. I'd rather be doing that than being stuck up there. So,
yeah. And so what are you studying in school?
Entrepreneurship, just to kind of enhance my skills for being a fishing guide, you know, just
really
trying. Yeah.
They had an entrepreneurship program, where my son goes to college, and he got into that program at Montana State. It was really good. What do they teach you in entrepreneurship? I mean, that's kind of a new major. They didn't have that.
Yeah,
when I was going to school.
It was new there. Like right when I started going, and, I was going to do business management. I switched over to entrepreneurship. My advisor kind of told me it would be worth a try, and they kind of teach you how to start a business. And then a lot of it's oriented towards like creating a product. So like they kind of teach you the steps of, you know, being creative and finding ways to innovate products and stuff like that. But they also, it's pretty good, 'cause they teach you how, there's a lot of different aspects of it, like marketing. Like I've learned how to market a business like online through Facebook ads and Google and stuff like that. I'm still got some stuff to learn, but it's pretty diverse in the amount of ways they kind of teach you how to run a business and make it better.
So have you been able to apply any of that to your guiding business already?
For sure. Yeah. I'm working on a website so I can kind of build my own website the way I want it. And I think the biggest thing is it's kind of taught me to think outside the box more, like in doing whatever I'm doing in maybe a little bit different of a way than what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you come from an interesting perspective. You're second generation. So you've been around the guiding business your entire life. You've seen what your dad's been doing. And, I mean, honestly, even in the last 10 years, it is a completely different world. When you throw social media and you throw websites and everything, podcasts and videos and YouTube and everything, you throw all of that into the mix. And, you know, the way that I started, the way your dad built his business is somewhat applicable, but not exactly. Like, it's not like you can do what you saw him do, right?
So what
do you
see? Not holding up fish at the dock, you know.
Yeah, put them on the nail and having the tourists walk down. I mean, that was a major source of business. So what do you see as the biggest things that have changed in your opinion as a second generation kind of coming up?
It's, you know, it's been so different for me because I grew up doing the offshore stuff with him. So like when I took a liking to the inshore stuff, it was a big change. Kind of, you know, you're more isolated, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not talking on the radio. You really don't want to talk to anybody. At least I don't. I try not to talk to as many people as I can, but, you know, it seems like it's more isolated and you're kind of on your own, you know. I've been lucky enough to have some buddies that have helped me out in sending business, but it seems like you kind of have to find your own path. And, it was good to grow up around that too, because you learn a lot of people skills with offshore stuff. You know, you're dealing with six people instead of one or two.
Right.
So that was cool to learn, but it's definitely changed. I've noticed there's a lot more center consoles running around now, you know. It seems like the fleet of boats is definitely changing, just the way, the style of fishing and everything's so moving so fast now. It seems like, you know.
Yeah, there have been some major innovations. I mean, in outboard technology and boat technology. I mean, the boats that are available now they weren't available. I mean, a big boat when I started guiding was a 28 Whitewater. That was like a big boat, you know.
Uh-huh.
And now that's like doesn't even raise an eyebrow. I mean, looking
it's crazy.
At you know, 42s and other things. People are guiding out of those boats. It's incredible. It's changed the game. Much more fuel much more fuel capacity, much more range, speed.
Yeah, people are running hundreds of miles, you know.
It's incredible, man. So when you have the offshore background like that, and that's what your dad has done so successfully for a long time, what was the draw for the inshore for you?
I think the mystery of it, you know, like that was initially what drew me to it. We would go into the out back, you know, occasionally and fish some stuff, but you know, I'd always hear about it. And I grew up fishing around my grandma's on foot a lot, you know, for bonefish and little tarpon and stuff like that. So I kind of had an idea of it, but as soon as I got a skiff and I could go back there, it was like open up a whole new world. You know, I think the hunt and being by yourself and not looking at other boats all day, I think that's the coolest part of it.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously doing a really good job with it. We had a great time fishing with you, doing the show. We didn't have the best weather, but, you know, that's the test, you know, of a guide is, and especially when you're doing it with a TV show, that is not ideal. I mean, you're carrying another boat. You got another boat following you around. You have to, you know, you get a shot pretty quickly and you have to, everybody's telling you, no, you can't catch that fish. You got to wait. Well, that's the only fish we've seen in hours.
Yeah. You're sitting there teasing them, you know?
It is a different deal, shooting the TV show and everything moves incredibly slowly, but you did a great job with that. And, I just found it kind of interesting, just your whole story, how you're going to college and guiding, you know, throughout. I mean, you started, right away when you were in college. When did you start guiding? Before college or during college?
Right out of high school when I was 18. So before, and then I went to college the next fall. So, you know, I kind of always planned on doing it this way, but I didn't know how it was going to unfold.
Yeah.
So it kind of took a year or so to figure out how to balance it, you know, going from high school where you can kind of just snake your way through everything. And then now it's time. And when you go to college, it's time to actually do the work. It took some adapting, but now I kind of got it figured out. So
yeah, well, it's, I mean, there's tremendous respect that you are finishing, because when you, I mean, you obviously have built a reputation enough to where you could book a full schedule right now. And so you're looking at, do I go to school? Do I just take this job full time? So how did you, I mean, like why did you do that? What was the incentive to going back to school? Because I got to tell you, man, I don't think I would have done that. I
didn't really want to do it at first. You know, my parents and a lot of other people kind of encouraged me and told me that it would be worth it in the long run. Cause you never know where you end up. And, it was hard until I could talk myself into doing it, you know, because you can kind of do things when people are telling you to do it, but to an extent. And then I think around like my spring semester, my freshman year, I kind of told myself, you know, I've gone this far, I've gone a year. So it's like, why would I waste a year? Let's just go the rest of the way and get through it. So, and I have learned a lot, you know, now that I've actually kind of found interest. The first 2 years was a little more boring because you're just getting your general education stuff out of the way. But now that it's applying to the major, it's, you know, you're learning valuable information.
Certainly valuable information. But when you're talking about, like, they're talking about innovating a product and doing things better, can you kind of in your mind create your hospitality, your guide service as that product and then start? Is that kind of where you're thinking about outside of the box?
I've actually taken some hospitality classes as electives, and those have honestly been, I'm taking one right now. I was thinking about it the other day. That's probably been one of the more useful classes I've taken in the last couple of years, was the hospitality. Cause it reminds you that, you know, you're providing a service rather than, you know, getting angry at the fishing and the guy not making the right cast. You have to remind yourself that of the service you're providing. And that kind of instilled that thought into my mind. And I feel like I've been a better guide because of that class.
You froze up just for a second, but, that's just a straight up, they just call it hospitality 101 or what?
It's intro to hospitality. So that's just kind of the basics, but you know, everything, it's more like hotels and stuff with services. And, but it, you know, in my mind, as he's saying all these things, I'm applying it to what I'm doing and it's really useful.
Right. Because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of days where, you know, the fishing, the weather, the whatever doesn't really allow for, you know, the best fishing. And the best fishing guides that I know are really good entertainers as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they, you know, they also can catch fish as well as any of them, but there's plenty of people that never enter a tournament, that never, you know, are competitive at all. And they have a book of business that would never go fishing with anyone else because they love that person so much. And that person understands that what they do is there's a little showmanship to it. There's a little entertaining. There's a little bit of making sure that everybody's having a good time. And some people miss that. And they can be the best fishing guide. They can catch the most fish, but nobody wants to fish with them because they're screaming at their clients and they're the old keys guy.
I hear the horror stories all the time, you know, like people, and it's funny, like it sticks in people's heads. Like they'll come back, they'll tell the stories, you know, sometimes. And I try to learn from other people's mistakes sometimes and just kind of take what you can get from hearing those kind of things, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So how much more school do you have?
I got two more semesters just to finish up. I'm pretty much done with my major. I just have some electives I have to take. It's been tough because I've been trying to balance the work and school things. So I've been taking like four classes a semester. So it's kind of set me a couple semesters back. So I'm just kind of catching up. But as soon as I'm done, I'm going to try and go in full time and book as many days as I can, you know.
And you got to be in a great position. So many kids are coming out of school with debt. You're coming out of school having worked like a ton.
Feel very lucky.
That's a really good position.
Yeah.
So what are your plans? You're going to go full time into guiding, and what does that look like for you?
Just kind of carrying on what I've built through the last couple of years with the people that I've fished with, and then hopefully meet a lot of new people. I've been lucky enough to have some really cool people I've fished with. So, you know, I have a lot of days built up over the summer months. So now it's kind of just working on the wintertime stuff whenever those people can come down. And now it's giving me the opportunity to meet a lot of new people too. This year it's tough because like everybody's dates rolled over to this year. So it's
right.
I've got kind of a crammed schedule. So I don't get to take in as many new people as the year prior or the year before that. But I'm excited to be able to have more time to take in some newer clientele.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So one of the things that you've also done pretty extensively, and you can just see in the background of your of what we're looking at here, there's a big check on the wall and a giant dolphin. So you got a pretty extensive tournament resume too. How do the tournaments play into your future plans or what you're, you know, how important do you think that is to a guide that's starting out to be in the tournaments?
I think for sure it helps, you know, whether you're doing good or not, you get to meet a lot of new people, a lot of really good anglers. I met a lot of really cool people at some of those events. And if you do well, it obviously spreads, but, I guess it depends on your style of fishing and what your book looks like, but it's pretty important in my head. It's all I think about, you know, any day I'm fishing is, you know, if I find something good, I kind of just keep it in mind, for the next tournament. But, I guess it just depends. Cause I've got some buddies that aren't as into it and they do really well. And I've got some buddies that are really into it and they do really well too. So I guess it just depends on, your intensity with it. Cause it's, you know, it seems like you got to give it your all.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say is like, tournament fishing is not something that you go halfway into, or certainly you're not going to be very successful with it because, and maybe there was a time when you could just kind of, fish a tournament or two a year. But I think that the landscape has gotten so competitive and there's so many people that are basically keeping those tournaments in mind all year long, like what you're talking about, that somebody that just kind of decides they're just going to dabble in a tournament, I'm not sure that they're going to do as well as maybe they might think because
no. And I think the important part too is building a team as guide and angler too. Cause if you don't have that team, you're not, I don't think it's as easy. I have a harder time enjoying my time in a tournament if you're not in sync with the guy on the bow. Like if the guy on the bow is having to think about when he's going to get the next shot and he's not really worrying about his own skills, you know, it kind of tweaks you out as a guide. Like if he's looking back at you, you know, just if you have the guy on the bow that, you know, you fished a bunch and you're not thinking about all the things that you would think about if you hadn't fished before, like that would stress you out. If that makes sense, you're only worried about finding that next fish and you know, the guy on the bow is going to get it done.
Yeah.
Seems like
you know, the Florida Keys tournament history probably as well as anybody. You grew up around it. You're watching it all the time. What do you think? Who do you think are some of the best teams that you've seen, guide angler teams? When you talk about that, like, who stands out in your mind is like, man, those guys are hard to beat.
Lately, it's Richard Black and Rob Pries. I mean, every tournament, that, or Richard and Bokor. I mean, if those guys are in a tournament,
and anybody, or Richard and the, you know, Richard's, yeah. Richard's well, I mean, an amazing
lately,
guy.
That's been the team that's, you know, you're not surprised when you come back and they got a full score sheet.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
You know, Jared Raskob, he did really good a couple years back, and he doesn't fish as many tournaments now, but it's like, if he fishes a tournament, he's going to win, you know, it's like, it's crazy. You know, you pretty much know going into it who you have to worry about, but sometimes people will surprise you.
Do you ever see surprises where you see a great angler and a great guide get put together and they don't do as well as maybe you might have thought?
I can't think of any examples of that, but yeah, I mean, if you think, a lot of people think it's guaranteed if a great angler and a great guide or two guides get together in a tournament, but you know, in the end it's just fishing. And if you don't get the opportunities that you need, it's not going to work out.
Two guides fishing together does not always mean they're going to win. If you ask me,
sometimes you butt heads.
I know. That's what I'm saying is like, yeah. you can fish really well. Two guides can fish really well together and it can be a superhero team, or it can be like, I think we should go over there. I think we should go over there. And so you don't go to either place, or it messes up the plan altogether. And you know, two alphas on the boat might not be the best team. Like I was going to ask you, like, what do you think the recipe is for the best team?
Fishing a lot with somebody who's obviously a good angler, but like I have some guys that I fish with quite a bit. And you know, you might, the first couple of days you fish might be rough. Like when you first start off, you might not be as productive, but it seems like it comes down to, I mean, anybody who fishes tournaments or as a guide would know. I mean, like, the guy on your bow is 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock is going to be completely different from your 10 o'clock for the first 6 days you fish with them, you know, or 30 feet or 100 feet. Like, so it seems like the more you fish with somebody, the closer your idea or your gauge of your clock and your distance narrows down. And that I feel like makes a big difference, because, you know, how long do you get, you know, if you're bone fishing or any kind of fish, how long do you get from the time you see the fish to where the bait needs to be in front of it?
I mean, you need to react in a half a second. You really do. Yeah. And that's where what you're talking about is like, if you're just on the same page and you're like left, you know, I mean, I had some anglers that I wouldn't even have to call out the time. I would just say left or right or 11, you know, 11 o'clock or whatever, but we were just on the same page, like what you're talking about. They just knew where I was looking, and they would know that I'm not calling out, I'm not going to, you know, call out something with a lot of anxiety back here at 8 o'clock.
He's over there.
You know? Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's like left 10 o'clock. Left 30 feet, go. And they just know where it is, you know? And you find that with some people where just right away you kind of click and you're kind of looking in the same spots. And then with other people, man, it is more of a struggle. And it's like, okay, is it my communication skills or is it his understanding of what I'm trying to say, which probably boils down to the communication skills. But
yeah,
that's where, you know, I think some teams are just going to be better than others.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And it might take, it seems like it takes a couple years to figure out who you're going to really blend with. That's why I'm kind of like, you know, I want to fish with as many people as possible to see who's going to be the best teammate for that kind of stuff, you know, kind of mm-hmm. feel around and eventually find somebody who you can be in sync with.
Right. And then you can be in sync with that person and something changes in their life. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they get a divorce. Maybe their kids leave, even go to college, or something changes in their life. And all of a sudden they can't fish as much as they used to, or all of a sudden the tournaments aren't as important to them as they used to be. And that chapter closes and you got to find a new one. You know, you got to find somebody else that wants to.
Well, that's what's cool about it, I guess. You know, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to try to do it here. Put your Instagram on the screen here, and you probably can't see what I'm doing, but everybody else can. So the last couple of posts that you had on your Instagram are pretty incredible. Like, you don't post a lot on your Instagram, but you have one of my favorite Instagrams, and one of them is this Goliath grouper deal.
Oh yeah, the topwater bike.
Yeah, it's the coolest video.
Well, not many people post. I try to post some odd stuff like that every now and then. You know, I think there's a CUDA eating my most views are the CUDA eating the tube on there.
Well, yeah, that's an incredible video, and I actually saved it because I talk about barracuda fishing a lot, and that was a perfect video. I'll see if I can pull it up. It was a perfect video to show like what a barracuda wants and how you have to have it, because you just start kind of twitching it and he comes up and just puts his nose on it and he won't do it. And then you make another cast and rip it through there and he eats it. Like, that's the only thing
he wanted. What that fish wanted.
Yeah. And that's how it has to be, like all the way to the rod tip. Like, that's what I'm always telling people when we're doing that, is you reel that thing all the way to the rod tip. And it's like, they see the boat as something that this needlefish or this lure is going to get away from. And so if you slow it down at all next to the boat, they would all eat it. And this video that you have is just a perfect example of that, how you're twitching.
My girlfriend
it like a
took that. She was like eating lunch on the cooler and I was fishing. It didn't even really mean to be that cool of a video. It just ended up being perfect, you know.
You couldn't have done it any better. That one was perfect. But the one that that I started talking about was this Goliath grouper, where you're kind of pitching a pilchard to the mangroves, I guess it's a pilchard. And
a shrimp, yeah.
Oh, it's a shrimp. And this Goliath grouper just comes up and you're stuck in the bushes. And you just kind of raise it up, or whoever's fishing just kind of raises it up, and this Goliath grouper comes and sucks it right off the surface and then pulls the line out of the.
Yeah. He had eaten like two or three of our shrimp before then. So that's when I pulled out the phone. He was a little fired up.
That is awesome. That is such a cool video. So if you're not following, Paul, it's like underscore. Is it double underscore?
I think it's two or three underscores.
So
it's not the most.
You just look up Paul Ross and you'll probably get it. But I do suggest that you follow this Instagram, because not only this one, but what we're really going to talk about is I got to talk about this bluefin tuna too, that you had here. Tell me about catching a bluefin tuna. Is that the only one that you've ever caught?
Yeah. I'd never caught one. That was the first time I'd gone up north. My dad's buddy, Brett Wilson, runs a boat up there, out of, Cape Cod. And we planned on it last year and it didn't work out because of COVID. And then we went up there this year. The coolest part was catching bait the first day.
Yeah.
We went and caught, I thought we were going to catch those tinker mackerels or whatever. We put out these lures, dragging them on top. We're catching like 8-10 pound bluefish for bait.
Really?
Off the beach. Yeah.
And that's what you're using for the thing. That's what you're using.
And when the guy would pull it out of the live well, he'd be like wrestling it on the ground. Like, I mean, the bluefish were like 36 inches long. And we did fish some mackerels and some dead baits. But yeah, that thing ate a bluefish. It didn't fight the first 20 minutes. Thought it was a shark.
Really?
It just like not pulling, not gaining, just dead weight. Like, just sat there. It was
so
like
you didn't see it. You didn't see it eat it?
No. And then it came up like maybe 30 minutes in, and then it was weird. It was like, it was hooked in the mouth, but it was like wrapped up under his pack fin or something. So we went down and just did circles around the boat for like an hour and 30 minutes after that. But
what did you think about, with all the fishing that you've done, what did you think about the bluefin tuna as a,
that was the coolest thing ever. It wasn't even like a fish. It was like an animal. It was like harvesting a cow or something, you know, like I don't do much hunting, but that was closer to harvesting like a wild animal out of, on land than a fish. It was so, so disproportionate to anything I've seen. It was really cool. I think we're going to plan on going back up there. It was so, that was the only bite we had. It was a slow couple of days when we were fishing, but we were lucky enough to catch that. I mean, that was definitely the most amazing thing I've ever seen on the water.
Now, where do you go out of to do something like that? Where's your dad's buddy?
Out of Provincetown. I think the,
we're fishing Canada, like, or is that in the States?
No, it was in Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Okay. Oh, Cape Cod. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, it was cool seeing, you know, the lighthouses and stuff like that. It was, I've always wanted to go up there. So it was cool.
Yeah. And then cold. I guess like when I was asking if it was in the United States or Canada, cause I guess that Prince William Sound is like, that's supposed to be. The,
yeah. Yeah. I know Nova Scotia's got like 1,000 pounders or something up there, but
yeah.
And you know what the cool part was? That fish was only like 100 feet of water.
Really?
It was like, yeah, like fishing 2 miles from the shore. You could see the dock where we're fishing.
That's incredible. Well, it looks like a really big fish. I don't know how big 1,000 pounder
was around,
look, but you look tiny.
75. Yeah, it was a big fish.
That's awesome. So that's pretty cool. I definitely wanted to ask you about that. But then this latest post, the Super Slam on fly by yourself.
Yeah, that was a little bit of luck involved in that one.
But, well, I want to know about it because I don't know that you could do anything more difficult.
No, like, I'm not trying it again.
So, what? Tell me how it happened.
I didn't mean to do it. It was like I don't know, on a Friday or something. I came home from class late. I didn't leave the dock till like 10 o'clock, and I just went out by myself. I don't know if there was a tournament. I think I was just looking for stuff, you know, finding new stuff. And I slowed down in the first area. I caught a permit on a crab, and I don't ever fly fish for permit or anything. And, I was like, I'll just, you know, I'll tie a permit fly on. What am I going to do? I had maybe, I think, you know, too, the crabs were so big. It kind of, I had a better chance of plopping a little tiny fly. I was slicked off. So I tied permit fly on, went back in there, immediately had a shot. And then I think, no, I didn't even have a shot. I threw a false cast in there to strip my line in the boat, and one came up off the bottom and charged it. I pulled it back out of the water. I'm like, all right. So I go in maybe another 30 yards, and then there's one just floating, and I plopped it on his tail. Terrible cast. I guess it wasn't. And thing spun around. I let the fly sink and just stripped tight to him, and he was there. I caught the permit. I didn't think much of it besides how, you know, I was happy I caught a permit on fly or whatever, but like, oh, I'll go see if I can catch a tarpon. So I went in, shut down, pulled maybe 100 feet. There was tarpon laying there. Caught him. I was like, all right, now I got to go bone fishing. And I was up way up in Key Largo. And so caught a bonefish, maybe 45 minutes in. There was a big mud of them. And caught one of those. And it was like maybe 1:30 or so or 2 o'clock. So it was like, I didn't have anything going on. I was like, all right, I'll run the flamingo. Cause the only person who had ever done that supposedly, was Jared Raskob prior to that. Jared and, an angler of his did it like maybe 5 years ago.
Super Slam on fly.
Yeah. That was the only other person I'd known that had done that. So ran the flamingo. And there was a bunch of schools of reds around. It was pretty easy to just shut down and started pushing big wake, caught one of those. And the snook was it always, for me with Super Slams, it always comes down to the snook. Cause it's like, usually it's late in the day. And like, if you catch one right away, it's whatever. But, I had to go on a, you know, the water was high. I had to go on a shoreline. Just, I put a split shot on the fly and blind casted that thing for like 150 casts and caught one. And, that was that. It was,
so what time did you finish that up?
4:30.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah,
it was like 4:35 or something. I caught the snook.
Well,
the reds and snook was, they were like 30 minutes apart, 40 minutes apart.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible for a number of reasons. One, we're so fortunate to have the fishery that we do so close 100%. To one another, right?
I wouldn't want to fish anywhere else just because of that. Like you can go you catch a sail or a tuna in the morning and you run back and you go bone fishing. Or if you don't want to go bone fishing, you go snooker red fishing. You can't do that anywhere else in the world.
It's unbelievable. And it's incredible, but that's really awesome. But then, you know, to get it with a, you know, a guide and an angler getting a super slam, that's pretty awesome. And I know that you've done that a number of times. How many times have you done that?
On fly? No, I've caught maybe half a dozen, not on fly, you know, mixed, you know, a couple on spin, a couple on fly. That was the only one I've ever done on fly.
And then what about just a slam, a permanent bonefish and tarpon?
Slams 20 something, yeah. But you know, there's guys hundreds.
Well,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, but of course, but you're a very young man. Yeah. There's only so much time. I mean, yes, Mark Croca has hundreds
Croca's
of slams.
Croca's got like over 800 or something.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
He's also quite a bit older than you. But you're getting an impressive number of them, but to this one, a super slam. So a permit, a tarpon, a bonefish, a redfish, and a snook that comprises the super slam. And you do it on fly, which is definitely makes it harder. But then by yourself on fly. So by yourself with a spinning rod, and by yourself with a fly rod, two totally different things in my book. I think, and maybe you have, and I want to talk to you about it, like maybe you have a technique, but I used to do a lot of fly fishing. I tried to catch a permit on fly by myself for a year, and it was incredibly difficult. I mean, you finally get the perfect situation, you get the perfect shot, and you try to get off the polling tower and get down, and somehow you trip over something and you make noise, and next thing you know, the fly line's under the boat, and everything under the sun can go wrong. Where if you have a spinning rod, you know, you can have it with you on the tower and you don't have to get down. And that makes all the difference in the world. But what do you think the hardest part about fly fishing in a skiff by yourself is?
Oh, getting from the polling platform to the bow of the boat, which luckily that day I had a trolling motor. I couldn't have done it without a troll. Just the fact, the way my boat sits, like if you're by yourself, it's so light on the bow, like it, that there's so much hull slack. Mm-hmm. You have to put like buckets of water on the bow.
That's what we used to do. We used to fill the cooler full of, that was Simon Becker told me that. I was like, man, I can't get close to these fish because I'm just making too much noise. And he's like, oh, you put the cooler up on the bow and you fill it full of salt water.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, that puts about 200 pounds up there.
Yeah.
That made a huge difference.
No, that day, I caught, I think three, I caught the permit, the bone, just the permanent, the bone was the trolling motor. The rest of it was either pushing, you know, cause it was calm and you could kind of, but I wouldn't have caught the permit without the trolling motor. Was on such a low setting. If you have it on a higher setting, you might know more than I would, but it seems like if you have it on a higher setting with those things, they can feel that vibration.
For sure. Yeah. It definitely, I mean, if you have it on low and you just creep up to them, you can get very close to them. You had a bow mount trolling motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, there's still a major obstacle there. If the line gets outside of the boat, now the trolling motor chews it up.
It was wrapped right here around the remote. It was like double wrapped.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things that can go wrong in that situation. When I read that post, I was like, holy shit, he did this by himself on fly.
Yeah.
Like, do you have a like a line tamer or like a bucket or anything that you were keeping the line in? What do you do for the line?
I don't think I had it that day. With a lot of people, I don't really like using it because I feel like they worry more about putting it in the bucket than catching the fish in front of them sometimes. Yeah. But I don't think I had it that day because it was pretty calm. I think I was just stripping in the boat. But a lot of times when I'm fishing by myself, I use the bucket just because if you're poling, you can have it in there laying in the line's not wrapped around your phone or your cooler or whatever.
Yeah.
But
that makes
sense. Yeah. I think I just had it laying in the deck.
Now the worst,
still, it wrapped around.
Yeah. The worst idea is that I had is trying to keep it all up on the tower with you. And now it's all around the engine, you know,
tarpon fishing. Yeah. I find myself trying to do that. That's when I really use the bucket. If you're sitting on the ocean or something by yourself, that's a nightmare without a bucket.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, and then to land a fish like that just by yourself, it just the difficulty. It's already hard to do, and it's already hard to do with a professional guide behind you that's perfectly positioning the boat and telling you exactly what to do. It's a difficult thing to do. Then when you then you try to do it by yourself, even if you're doing it with a spinning rod, it's very difficult to do. Your bait dies. Now you got to get down off the tower. You got to put bait on. I mean, the whole thing is just
terrible.
And you're drifting the whole time. And then to put a fly rod in that situation with 60 feet of line out in the boat, man, I don't know. I just thought that what you did was one of the best angling accomplishments I've ever read or heard
about.
Appreciate
it. Well, there's a lot of days I go out there and don't catch anything.
Well, sure, but
it just happened to, but it was really cool. And it, you know what? It's funny when you see it all unfold the way it happens, it doesn't seem like anything. It doesn't seem as crazy, but it definitely probably the best thing I'll ever do personally as an angler, you know.
Well,
besides
maybe
the bluefin.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You might go out there and double slam one day.
Never know.
Like that. Because I mean, when you're putting in the days, I mean, I'd like to get your opinion on this, but you know, like my son this year killed his first elk with a bow. And
awesome.
He's been trying for 5 years, right? And it was when this is all unfolding, I'm with him. And I've been with him 3 or 4 times elk hunting, but this time was a little bit different and things were happening. I was like, this is going to happen this year. Like we got into them and I was like, this is going to happen. But when you haven't ever done that, it's hard to see it unfold. Like it's 100%. Hard to see what's going to happen. And it just kept me going back to this time when I came to the Florida Keys and I was getting my captain's license. I spent a year on the water and I just decided I wanted to catch a permit by myself on fly. And I just put a lot of time into that. And it was horribly unsuccessful and horribly frustrating. And, you know, I would get the best shot and then it's hooked around the freaking steering wheel and there's nobody there to help you. And it just was so difficult. And then finally it happens. And when it did happen, there was nothing to it. It just happened exactly like everybody said it was going to happen.
Yeah.
It just happened exactly like I hoped it would happen, but I had never seen it happen. And and like, that's what happened with this elk hunting situation of all of a sudden everything finally came together and we just did it. It just happened. And when it happened, my son was like, I can't believe how fast that happened. I can't believe all of this. Right. And so that's kind of what you're describing of, well, this super slam on fly, it just kind of happened. Like, just caught this fish and then I caught this fish and I went over here and they were there. And it's like this unfolding, but I don't think that ever happens. Or if you would ever be capable of capitalizing on that, if you hadn't put in your time and you haven't seen all of these things happen and you haven't had all these terrible mishaps of all
100%.
Like, what do you think about that?
No, you can't. I mean, if you're going to go out there and that was your only day ever going out there, but you better play the lottery, you know, like there's no way. But yeah, I mean, you just learn, like even going by yourself, you might go one time and I feel like the stress level is absolutely zero when you're by yourself. Cause even not that it's stressful fishing with a buddy or anything, but like, you know, they're not questioning what's going on. You don't feel like you have to keep them entertained. You know, nobody's walking around the boat making noise. It's only what you want to do. So I feel like in every time you go, you might learn a better way to be more effective at doing it by yourself. You know, whether it's the bucket thing or checking where your fly line's at before you get back up on the platform, or maybe pushing from the bow if you can, or whatever that is. But for sure, I mean, it's definitely a chain of events that leads up to that kind of success.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you're now that you're booking more and more and more days, and you develop quite a reputation, you're winning tournaments, you're doing things like this, lots of people want to go fishing with you. How do you feel about the lack of days by yourself? Like when I was first starting, fish by myself a bunch, and then you should get booked a bunch, and then you're like, man, I haven't fished by myself in a year or more.
Yeah.
And so how do you feel about that? Like, it seems like you kind of like fishing by yourself.
I do. Yeah. Well, so many of my buddies now are so busy, you know, they either got kids or they're working or doing whatever. So I don't really, a lot of times I don't really have an option, you know, but it is nice. I enjoy it. I find that you definitely have a lot more time to think when you're by yourself. You don't have anything else to do. But yeah, I enjoy it. I think in the future, I'm going to try, and a lot of my older buddies that are, you know, they've kind of learned more now because they've been fishing, you know, 10 years more than I have. They've got it figured out now. They've kind of told me ahead of time to take more time off. So I'm going to try and split it up, you know, maybe take 2 days off a week or one day, maybe start with one day, and try and take some time off, whether that's to do, you know, fun stuff fishing or go do something else. Definitely have to have time to clean the boat every now and then. I find that the more days in a row I fish, the quicker my boat wash gets at the end of the day. Yeah. So that's definitely one thing that needs to be addressed too on a day off. But,
well, you also go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there's also working on the business and making sure that, you know, like if you're in the middle of tarpon season, you got the next 120 days booked in a row. It's hard to think about, man, I really need to be thinking about next winter and what I need to do to make sure that I'm booked all the time.
Yeah.
Then, and that's what I certainly wasn't thinking about it, but we didn't have the opportunities for the marketing that you're learning about in school. Like our marketing was you win a fishing tournament or you're the last one at the boat ramp, you know, like
yeah.
People see your truck there all the time and they're like, yeah, that guy's fishing a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And it was almost the opposite. Like the more you fished and the less you answered your phone, the more 100%. In demand you were, because
I'm like, so bad. If I fish, like, you know, if I'm fishing a bunch of days in a row in the spring or summer, it's like the last thing I want to do at this time of night is, you know, 6:30 at night, 7:30 at night is text a paragraph back about what you want to do in December, you know?
Yeah. But it's super important. Like,
oh, 100%, I do it, but I'm bad about it. Sometimes it's like, I'll have to, you know, maybe somebody's text sends and then I go a day without responding. And then I have to go back and text the 10 other people that message me, you know, and try and knock it all out. But it's a bad problem sometimes.
Yeah. But you are learning in school. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of the things that you're learning in those classes could be applicable to, you know, building a business and keeping it sustainable and making sure that you're taking care of it. And that's where a lot of, you know, taking a day off a week or something to where at least you can put an hour, 2 hours into it to make sure that, I don't know, you don't have to do it anymore. You probably take Venmo and everything else, but, we had to deposit the checks and there wasn't any take a picture of it on your phone. It's like, you got to go to the bank. What a drag it was to go to the bank and deposit all this money. That sounds like such a first world problem, but the checks are all wet. And then you got to call the dude to send you another check because it's all tattered and wet and they won't take it.
Find it on the driver's seat or your feeder.
Yeah. Because you're just working so much, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, I'm glad you told me that story. I wanted to hear that so bad about just how that happened. What do you think about just the difficulty of either a regular slam or a super slam? What do you think, like somebody that doesn't understand kind of what that's all about, what makes either of those difficult in your opinion?
Oof. It's almost like the way I look at it is it's almost like it's a payoff to the amount of days that you don't get one. Like, and I have some people I fish with that, like, we'll do it a lot, but you know, there's so many days that it just doesn't work out. So like when you finally do get one, it's almost like the end of the road for that batch of days. You finally got it. And then now you're worried about the next one. Cause yeah, there's just some days you can't, you know, you might have high water, no sun, and you're trying to bonefish or, you know, whatever the case may be, even the tarpon, you know, there's so many days where you might not catch a tarpon in the morning. It's slicked off and you get all excited and you want to go bone fishing or permit fishing. It seems like it's just time. Like the more time you put into it, eventually it's going to happen. And when it finally does, it's just so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that it's the only place in the world you can catch all five. I think that's to be able to do it. It takes so much time, but when you finally do it, it makes you realize what a special place this really is, you know?
Yeah. So in your mind, is that always in the back of your mind? Like, is there a possibility, say you catch a bonefish and a tarpon in the morning and you're kind of like,
Yeah,
we got time.
Yeah. If it's that kind of day, there's some days, you know, people just want to go, you know, catch dinner. We go trout, snapper fishing, whatever. It depends on the people. If like, you know, obviously if we're doing it, you know, we're in the hunt, we got a tarpon and a permit, then you're going to go bonefish until the sun goes down. But, yeah, it just depends. Like, there's some days you can kind of feel the people out. If it's not that much of a priority to them and you feel like you could make their day better doing something else, then I might just go do something else rather than kind of forcing them into that zone. But
see, that's the hospitality right there. That's the hospitality. where one guy might be like, nope, you're three quarters of the way there and we're doing this. And they're
in the end, it's their day, you know? So it's tough. I have the urge sometimes, but most people, if they understand what it is and they want to go for it, then for sure. But yeah, I think it just depends on the day.
There's also the time management of just, at some point you just run out of time, you know?
Yeah. And energy.
There's definitely energy. You're probably have plenty of energy. The angler a lot of times runs out of energy and is like, man, I just kind of want to go home. I really don't care about catching this, the rest of it. But you know what else I saw recently was your dad's video of the great white.
Oh, that wasn't that crazy?
Man, what did he have to say about that?
Not much.
I mean, that's like the best video I've ever seen.
I know. Well, I think that's like going back to the thing. If you saw, he was freaking out, but like, I think if you would have seen it in person, it was just the way it was. But when you like, I mean, that's one of the few times I've looked at a great white and been like, wow, that thing's huge. And that fish in the video is like a 15-pound kingfish. It wasn't like a little mullet,
you know,
like a whole 15-pound.
You could tell it was a pretty big giant fish.
With like a 14-0 in its mouth, and it looks like he's got a 2-0 in its nose.
Yeah. And then they kind of were jigging it almost like a jerk bait. And then that great white actually looked like it missed it. Like, I mean, it did miss it. It came up and maybe it was kind of a half-hearted attempt at getting it. But that was one of the best videos that I've ever seen of that in the Florida Keys, because kind of like your Barracuda video that we talked about, it just happened to be perfect because the light was perfect. I've seen some other ones where I saw this one, the guy went live on Facebook, I think, and there was a great white that went around. Right? Yeah, it went all around it, but it was like in the glare and you could kind of barely see it. And then it would come into this area and it would be really good. And you're like, oh, that definitely is a great white. But then it would come back to the other side, just keep circling the boat. But your dad's video, this thing comes in the perfect light. You couldn't have asked for it to come in a better place. And just with a cell phone, you're able to get this incredible footage, and it tries to eat that kingfish. I thought that was so cool. And then,
I think it was a mean predator there.
Yeah.
A monster.
Did he learn anything about that? Like, has that fish been tagged? Do we know anything about that?
We'll look at the Shark Tracker app and like, just, you know, when you're bored, scroll through it and see whatever shark is. And I don't think it was tagged. It looked like it was full of seals. That's for sure. I mean, that thing had a giant girth on it.
It was incredibly round.
Yeah, it was giant. I don't know. I don't know if it was going to the Gulf to spawn or whatever. He doesn't know too much about him, but he sees like, you know, a couple a year, and usually they don't bite or even try to bite. They just keep swimming. But, that one was not happy, I guess.
Yeah. Or hungry.
Not hungry, not happy either.
Yeah, there was always people that would say, you know, they thought they saw one, but until they started tagging them and it became like really obvious that they were coming through the keys regularly. I mean, they're there. They're totally there. And I think that everybody understands that now. But for a while, you know, you see this big giant shark and you're kind of like, wow, I don't know what that was.
Like, you know, just call it Jaws. Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but it was something big. You know, I don't know. They're big. I've never really seen one, so I'm fascinated.
No, I haven't either. I mean, in the video was enough for me to think of, you know, next time I'm lobstering, I'll be thinking about what's watching me.
But yeah, and that thing was in 400 feet of water, right?
Yeah. It was not far from town. That's for sure.
I mean, 400 feet of water, that you can make out buildings.
Like, yeah, you're looking at buildings. Far. No.
Like, yep. You're like, oh, look, there's downtown. There's the Lorelei. There's, you know, that hotel, whatever.
Well, who knows how many come in closer than that, you know?
I'm sure some do. Who knows? I don't know. I don't ever see many sharks when I'm lobstering or anything like that. They're around and you see them occasionally, but not like that much.
No, I can't help but to just think about it, you know, like.
Yeah,
I'm not that I think I'm going to get bit, but like whenever I'm in the water, I'm kind of looking around, seeing.
Are you as comfortable in the water or out of the water? Some fishermen don't like getting in the water.
No, I don't like the water. I got buddies that spear wahoos and this stuff. Like, I don't like the water. I'll get in for lobsters and stuff like that. But if there's any kind of muddiness to it, I'm not getting in. I drop a rod in the water, phone, rod, anything goes in the water, I'm not getting it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's been the case with a lot of my friends too, is the more time they spend on the boat, the less time they want to spend in the water. And because they've seen, you know, a lot of things get bit out there.
I mean, I get the push pull ripped out of my hand probably at least 10 times a year, maybe 15. I mean, from angry sharks.
There in that dirty park water.
Yeah. Big bowls or lemons. Yeah. Even the clean water. I played with one the other day out around like channel banks or something. I poked one in the nose and he came up and ate the pole, ripped it right out of my hand, like 150-pound lemon.
You ever have him eat your trolling motor?
I've had him charge it. I haven't had one rip it out of the...
I had a bull shark.
I've seen videos. Try to
rip it off the front of my boat one time and it had, there were bite marks all over the thing. The blade is spinning and hitting him in the face as he's eating this thing. And it's not doing... You know, you always hear these people, they're like, oh, just punch him in the nose. Well, yeah. I watched him eat a motor guide trolling motor on high, and he didn't seem to care at all that the thing was smashing him in the nose repeatedly.
It probably hundreds made of times. Him even more hungry. I mean, the thing's probably had four turtles and a cormorant in his stomach.
Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of respect for the sharks, but other people, you know, they don't like you got your buddies that spear the wahoo. I got my friends that do the same thing. They go out there and you throw pilchards on top of them and they're laying in the chum slick and they're just waiting. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not as into that as they are for sure.
I don't even like if we're camping out of the Cape or something, you know, East Cape, Middle Cape, I won't even get past my knees in that water.
Well,
like if
I mean, going to the boat. But that's a lot different than swimming around.
Yeah.
Reef, you know, where it's perfectly clear.
Well, it's funny. Like we'll be out there. I got one of my buddies that he goes wahoo spearfishing maybe 2-3 times a week this time of year. And if we're lobstering in the summertime, you know, around the bridges, he's just as creeped out as I am. I feel like the close quarter thing when you're, you can't see as far away, it's something different to it.
For sure. Yeah. I don't like doing it around the bridges.
No.
But there are a lot of lobsters there.
There are.
There are a lot of lobsters.
Got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. So I want to just kind of bring this to a close. I appreciate all your time, but I want to ask you a couple of questions. So outside of fishing, what do you like to do? Like, obviously you don't like to get in the water that much.
No, fishing is about it for me. I never really did many sports or anything. Right now it's just school. And when I'm not doing that, it's thinking about what I'm going to fish for the next day and try to force myself to tie flies or leaders, whatever that is. But that's pretty much it. Just fish, a lot of fishing.
Right on. I like it. Okay. So you have, non-negotiables in life. And I started asking people this question recently because I've gotten some pretty interesting answers and I thought maybe I might turn this into a regular thing, but it'll be interesting to see what you have to say. So a non-negotiable is something like you wake up in the morning and before your head hits the pillow that night to go to sleep, you are going to either get this done or there's no way you're ever going to do that, whatever it might be. So do you have any non-negotiables in your life that you think about on a daily basis?
I don't know. I feel like when I'm going to bed, I always feel like I'm not going to wake up because my alarm clock's not going to go off or something in the morning. But I don't know. I try to, like, in a routine, I try to think about, I think my biggest thing before I go to bed is trying to think about where I'm going to fish the next day. But a lot of that doesn't really come till you're idling out of the channel and you can kind of see what's going on. But I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I don't.
What about on a charter? Like you got a charter and are there things that you are absolutely going to do or you are not ever going to do?
I think making them laugh is one of the first, like, you know, try and get to know the person and get them in a good mood is like on the ride. Sometimes the ride out, it's quiet in the morning, but try to keep people entertained all day long and try to make people laugh. Cause most of the time people make me laugh more than I'm not very funny, but most of the time the people make me laugh more than, but it makes the day more enjoyable. I think getting the people in the good mood is probably one of my main priorities besides figuring out where I'm going to fish.
Okay.
And some people you can't break, you know, some people are just lame, but
do you think they're lame or they're nervous?
No, most people are never nervous. Not that I get a lot of lame people, but some people are just like, they'll be on like a business. They'll just be on a business trip or something and they're not that interested in it, but mostly everybody I fish has been great. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have a lot more coming your way, I'm sure. But you always, you know, like that would be one of the questions that I got the most. Like, I bet you fish with a lot of assholes. And I was like, no,
you really don't.
Really,
I've zero people I've ever had any kind of problem with. Everybody's been really good. You know, some people you like more than others, but you know, it's surprising. I think the offshore stuff deals with it more. You know, you get a bunch of guys walking back from their big night, you know, they're showing up to the dock, no sleep.
My dad has a case of beer under their arms.
Oh, maybe five, you know, yeah. The bigger cooler, bigger boat. But my dad has all kinds of horror stories, but you know, I'm the amount of time I've been doing it is not even a fraction of other people. So I'm sure I'll have plenty of stories.
Well, you might be surprised. I don't know. It seems like the inshore fishing kind of draws a different crowd, like you say.
For sure.
And it's definitely more physical. There's not like a nice air conditioned salon. There's no shade. There's, you know, it's not for everybody. And, but you occasionally get somebody that books a trip and they had no idea what they were getting into.
That's the thing is they're not aware of what they're getting into.
Yeah. I've had people that showed up and they were like, this is the boat. You know? It's like, yeah, this is it. This is a pretty nice boat. In fact, it's just 16 feet long. What were you expecting? And they thought, exactly, well, that one over there, they point to like a 50 footer.
We had like a two boat group trip a couple months ago and like nine people showed up or something. We had to call a bay boat. Yeah. You'll get occasionally stuff like that, but no, it's always funny when stuff like that happens.
Are you booking most of your own trips?
I've had a lot of, mainly started off with overflow, from good buddies of mine that have helped me out. And, now it's like, you know, word of mouth from like those people I got that, you know, they had some friends and they are, you know, they've kind of come down regularly. So I've been lucky enough to have a lot of people that are, you know, regularly coming down here. So that's been good. So it's a lot of repeats now. And, this time of year, it seems like more new people, I guess, because you get different people coming down for Christmas and stuff like that. But
Gotcha. All right, man. Well, Paul, I appreciate you doing this with me, and I hope that we'll get to fish together again soon. I enjoyed fishing with you last time.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it too. Thanks for having me on here.
Absolutely. And good luck in school, man. Finish that up.
Thank you.
A lot of respect for you to do that when you got a paying gig.
I appreciate it.
You know, basically, a lot of people ask me when I was going to get a real job, but later I found out that I was making more than they were. And
yeah. You know, it's a lot of work too.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of work, but I mean, but you know, you're going to school and you're getting paid, and it would be really easy just to say, you know what, I could just get paid all the time. And yeah. And but you know, as somebody that's older and hopefully wiser, you're doing exactly the right thing, because you never know what's going to happen. Yep. Man. And you got that in your back pocket, and that's definitely a very good thing that I would recommend to anyone. But you're doing awesome, man. It's nice to have you on here, and I really love fishing with you. So we'll do it again.
Yeah.
All right. If people want to go fishing with you, follow you, do whatever, what do they do?
We're at no website right now, but you can call my, if you follow me on Instagram, I got my number on there, and trying to get a website up here soon. So hopefully I'll get that going, but Instagram's the best way right now, 'cause it's got my number on there, and that should be good enough.
Okay. All right. Call him Paul Ross on Instagram. I think it's _Paul_Ross, or I don't know. It's some combination of that. But if you find his Instagram, it will have a lot of fish on it and not much else. So that's right. How you'll know you found the right one. All right, Paul. Man, thanks. I appreciate it. Good luck to you. And we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Through the Blackwater bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinner's crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.